something adverts.
Yep, here we go. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios in the moors of Scotland. We alter your brain by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This makes your brain a tasty and toasty 165 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Dan Green? Is it working? Can you feel it?
Yes, I can feel it all the way over here in Scotland.
Yeah, and
shows how strong it is.
Yep, and it's a weird connection. It's an intergalactic connection here. We're going to work on it as we're going. It's been a long day for me. I've slept, 2 hours in the past 48. No, like 6 hours in the past 48. Dan Green, tell us who you are and why people should care.
I'm one half of the Greening Out podcast. I do it with my wife Katie here in Scotland. We are, to our knowledge, the only libertarian podcast in the whole country of Scotland.
Wow.
So why you should care, I suppose, we put a great kind of interesting Scottish slant on libertarianism, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. It's a good show, and you're gonna be on with her tomorrow night, right?
We are, yes, absolutely.
What time is it there right now?
It's actually just after 6 in the morning here, so it's not night time.
Wow. Did you sleep?
I did sleep, yeah. I've been off this week, so I've been able to kind of alter my sleeping pattern a little bit, because I was up at 3:30, so I wanted to be up in plenty of time, you know. I didn't want to take any chances.
Yep, so you're one of those foreigners that wants to take our radio jobs, huh?
I am, yeah.
Take the job from hardworking, patriotic, conservative American talk show hosts such as myself.
I know, we stopped doing that in about the early 1900s, I think.
Yeah, I think they closed the door on Scots around then. They said, bring us your tired, your cold, your hungry masses, except the Irish and the Scots. Yeah.
A lot of the English are taking your acting jobs in Hollywood just now.
I know. They're even doing American accents, like the guy Hugh Laurie who does House.
Dr. House. Yeah. I was surprised to learn that not a lot of people in America knew he was actually English, because he's been on, I remember him on TV when I was a child, you know, he used to do like sketch shows and stuff like that.
I didn't know he was British until I fell in love with that show. And generally, when I like a show a lot or a movie, I go on Wikipedia and read up about the actors. And I even read up on the the non-star actors. I'm kind of there's a bunch of non-stars that I kind of follow. Like you've been watching House of Cards, right? The American version.
Yeah, I've watched the first two. I haven't seen the new series yet.
Yeah,
don't spoil it for me.
Well, you know the guy Doug Stamper, that's like the, you know, the main character's right-hand man and henchman, and, you know, does everything from light typing to lying to Congress to murdering his enemies with his bare hands, that guy?
Yeah, that guy.
That actor, his name's Mike Kelly. I've been watching him for a long, like he was on one or two episodes of the show The Shield. He played a serial killer. Mm-hmm. And I was just fascinated with that guy. I was like, man, what a cool, weird actor and a cool, weird character when he was on The Shield. And I've kind of watched for him here and there. And whenever I see him, like, I get more excited seeing him having like 5 lines in a show than I do with a lot of people starring in a show. And it's been really cool to see him have this really creepy, developed character who's kind of almost who is a main character in House of Cards.
Yeah, and no, absolutely. He's brilliant. He is really creepy.
Yep. So, what American TV have you been watching lately and enjoying?
Well, you know what? We've been rewatching some Saturday Night Live
from the
2010 regions. Yeah, Katie and I actually quite like Saturday Night Live.
The new ones? You ever watched the ones from the 70s?
We have seen some of them, yeah. It used to be a time in Netflix when they had all of them. They had them going way back, like every decade, and then they took them all off.
Why do they take things off, man? Why do they do that? It's got to be something with licensing. But I've actually had it happen, like, when I'm in the middle of, like, the 5th season of, like, a 10-season show. You know, like, it just suddenly stops. it's not available.
Yeah, and why is there only one series of Metalocalypse? Because that's all we can get.
It kind of encourages piracy that they do that, you know?
It does. No, actually, it really does. Totally, because you get all these great shows and then you can't rewatch them again. Like, we only got through some of the 70s stuff in Saturday Night Live. We got through a lot of the 90s and that, and I particularly liked the 2000s. I thought that was probably my favorite decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, man.
Yeah, I used to watch the when I was a kid, I watched the Saturday Night Live live, like used to sneak up to watch, you know, stay up at boarding school.
It was on quite late.
Yeah, it was on really late for a 14-year-old. I remember one of the things that really blew my mind on there, I heard someone say the F word on there. It was a big deal, like somebody slipped and said the F word live, and I was just shocked. And the other thing that really blew my mind was the first time I saw Devo was on there. And, you know, they didn't even, I don't even think they had a record out, or they'd just come out with a record. I hadn't heard them. They were not on the radio. And I saw them and I was like, what is this? Cause I was into like Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. And I was like, this is so weird and cool. It's, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I didn't even know they were ever on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah. Yo, it's on YouTube, man. Go search sometime. Devo Saturday Night Live. First appearance. It's great.
I'm going to have to find it.
So Barack Obama is a liar and a socialist and his feet stink. Is there anybody from your kingdom you want to say that about?
Yeah, we could say that about David Cameron. Suppose I wouldn't say he's a socialist, but he is in a way.
Really? I think all politicians are socialists. All politicians, even like small government Republicans in America, they're all socialists. Because they want, you know, it's just a matter of degrees. Yeah, they're all fascists too, because they want some government involvement in business, and they're all socialists because they want, basically, if you're not a anarcho-capitalist or an anarcho-communist, you know, those filthy kind, ANCOM, if you're any kind of statist, if you believe in any kind of government at all, you're some kind of socialist. It's just a matter of degrees.
Yeah, I can actually see what you mean. I can see what you mean by that. Oh, no, I just never associate the word, you know, socialist with David Cameron. There's a lot of words I can't say on the radio I would associate with David Cameron. But
for those who don't know, who is David Cameron?
He's the Prime Minister of these United Kingdoms.
Is he Labour or Tory?
Conservative.
Tory,
Conservative. Yeah.
Why are they called Tories?
He is. I don't know. It's an old, it goes back to, well, actually they're called the Conservative Party, but there was an old Tory party that were just called the Tory Party. It's just basically short. It was, nowadays it's considered shorthand for conservatives because, you know, that's what they're called. But to actually call them conservatives would be a stretch, man. You know, because they support all these kind of weird socialist lefty policies. It's just a name now, like everything else is, you know. It's just all the one thing, and then they're just like this. They're the side that kid on, they're to the right, you know, and Labour are the side that kid on, they're to the left.
Hey, speaking of the fact that this is a teaching hospital, do you have that one button compression on your little mixer? The one knob compression? Is there a knob that says compressor?
Oh, yeah, there is, yeah.
Turn it all the way down.
All the way down?
To the left, yeah.
All the way down,
yeah. All the way to the Labour Party.
That's all the way to the Labour Party, yeah.
Okay. We'll work on it more during the break. So tell me more about the UK. So but people don't know, like Scotland is sort of part of Britain or the UK, or it's not Britain. What is it? Tell us what it is.
Well, Scotland is technically part of the United Kingdom, but it's got its own parliament as well. So we have a devolved parliament that has certain powers, but all the big stuff, you know, foreign policy and all that kind of stuff is still in the Westminster Parliament. And that's what partially why the whole independence thing arose, you know, as in for us to get full rights to the parliament that's here in Scotland and completely leave the English, you know, and Westminster to themselves. So that's why that all came up. Secession sounds great, but like the secessionists in Scotland are mostly lefties.
You know,
it's not really like America. Because the driving force behind it were the Scottish National Party, who you could call a social democrat party. But the other two parties behind it were the Scottish Green Party and the Scottish Socialist Party. So that tells you something, man.
Silly humans.
Politics.
Yeah.
I know.
So a while back, Scotland voted on secession, which wasn't really like not having a government. It was making their own tyranny. That lost by what percentage?
Oh, God, it was only like, I can't even remember. What was it? 45% said yes. 56 said no.
That adds up to 101% somehow, but I guess there's a margin of error.
Oh, no, sorry, 55 said no.
So is that do people still talk about it? Like, oh, we lost, okay, is it still a big topic there?
Well, it is. I mean, some people are trying to keep it more in the media than others. A lot of the groups that started, some of them have kind of shut down because there was a lot of different, you know, there was Women for Independence and there was like LGBT People for Independence, you know, and there was all these different kinds of
the me generation kind of people, like my flavor of specialness.
yeah it was all like that. They all got together, but see, there's a general election coming up now, and the Labour Party used to be the big party here, especially in Glasgow, but they backed the no side of the independence debate, and that was their biggest mistake, because like especially cities where Labour were really big, like Glasgow and Dundee, they all were yes supporters. So now they find that because Labour backed the no side, basically, that everyone's gone to the Scottish National Party, so they're basically finished as a, you know, political force here. So all the power is shifted to the Scottish National Party, and let me tell you, they have got some scary statist policies. They want to do this thing where they have a state representative for every child that's born in this country.
What?
Can you? Yep. Like, it's going through the parliament just now.
You get your own nanny when you're born, like your own government nanny.
Yeah, basically someone is assigned to you to check on your well-being by the state.
Wow.
And that's compulsory.
Is that going to pass? Is that going to happen?
It looks like it is. There's a campaign against it that, you know, we support totally. I know, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, how Orwellian is that?
What a jobs program, too. Like, you know, 100% unemployment, 0% unemployment, and everyone works for the government, and it takes a nation to raise a child. That is horrifying, man.
That is scary stuff.
How would you have any fun? You'd never be able to have fun. All right, we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
But you can even say I'm peeing.
Results will vary from case to case.
All right. All transactions are protected. 15 seconds. It's free to join. Let's talk about net neutrality. Okay. So I can blame the bad sound on that. Yeah. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. So this is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and your sound's better now, Dan. Go ahead and talk.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it must be better. It's got to be better.
Yeah, you didn't pay. You hadn't paid your internet communication, international telecom, Scottish fee, and you had to call them up during the break and put it on your credit card and buy 2 more hours of good international calling audio on your internets. No, it's not that, but this is kind of funny because someone I don't know named Voluntarist Mom tweeted today, Freedom Fiends claimed the drop in audio was not due to Fiend Phone, but due to blank. Fans of Libertarians Against Humanity fill in the blank. And this is a thing that keeps coming up. Like, now that we're promoting the fact that we're talking over this free software we made, this no government software called Fiend Phone, that our programmer and good friend, great friend, Derek Slopey made, And, you know, we're in the final week of the Fiend Phone Indiegogo. We've only raised about $1,000 and he's done about $20,000 worth of work. And we'd like to have him do more because there's more to be done. If you'd like to go, go to fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com, and click on the Indiegogo link and throw us a little cash if you want. It'd be really helpful. We could sell this for money. We could patent it and sell it, but we're not going to. We don't believe in that. So we're giving it away, but we need a little more money for the programmer. So if you want to help out, but we've been using this since Christmas, and I've always been very concerned with the audio quality of radio. I've always thought it wasn't good enough. That's one reason we don't take phone calls. Also, people are crazy, but and we don't care. We don't care what they have to say. So we've been using Fiend Phone since Christmas, and whenever the audio is not perfect, I always make it clear that it's not because of Fiend Phone. And you were having a problem with your mixer, and being the perfectionist that I am, I had you tweak it and fix it during the break, and your sound is better now. It's not perfect, but it's almost up to Fiend standards, and considering that you're really far away and it's really early in the morning, we're going to let it slide. So talk about net neutrality. We just passed it. Just had it passed at us here. It hasn't changed anything yet, but it will. It's a Trojan horse, man. It's going to explode, and a million spiders are going to come out of it and infect our brains.
That's the way I understand it. I was trying to read this article about what the difference is like between the internet in Europe and like in America just now, and I'm not terribly see with the tech words. That's when I really start to struggle. But basically what I was able to understand was the thing here is the internet is much more tightly regulated and it has a lot less reach than it has in the United States. And a lot of people now are saying that if you guys get net neutrality, then you'll have the same, you'll be in the same lower standards that we are all here in Europe.
What do you mean by a lot less reach? You're reaching all the way over to America here.
I think what they mean by reach.
Like a reach around? A government reach around?
I don't think... I'm actually not sure exactly what they mean by that. That was just in the summary.
Like the TSA, when you go through the airport, the TSA put on the blue purple gloves and they have a lot of reach. That's how I'm picturing it, how net neutrality will be. Yeah.
I think the EU's got a lot to do with it here, but... Not really sure. You know, there's all this jargon.
Yeah. You know, Bill Gates has been pushing for a world government lately. Do you know about this?
I do know about this, and it scares the heck out of me because the European Union is just like, it seems like it's one step on the road to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I never hated Windows the way a lot of people do, but I never really trusted that guy. He's not like 8 or 10 years ago, he started... You know, he does things like help children in Africa, and he spends his money. You know, he says he's going to die broke. He's not going to leave his money to his children. He's going to leave it to the world. And that's all fine and good. But then he got into like anti-smoking campaigns and, it just got a little creepier and a little creepier. And all of a sudden he's calling for a one world government. And that's, wow, man. Yeah.
Oh, see, it's also a wee bit, I don't know, like, see when he talks about these things he does in Africa, he seems like a eugenicist at times to me, you know. I don't know if you get that, but
well, that's the theory. You know, I mean, there's a conspiracy theory that the elites want to exterminate 9/10 of the world so they have more room to play. But I don't know, if you exterminate 9/10 of the world, I don't think you'd be able to, you know, you wouldn't have as much wealth to seep off of if all those worker bees were gone for the elites. I think they just want to have us running on treadmills like in Black Mirror.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org. Freedom Fiends. talking with Dan Green. Dan Green of the Greening Out podcast. Dan and his wife Katie are two of the new rotating on a spit guests, co-hosts.
And what a spit it is.
And what a spit it is. And he lives in Glasgow, Scotland. Glasgow or Glasgow?
Glasgow. Yeah, you do this every single time.
I will do it every single time. I don't have enough room in my brain to remember all these little facts. I'll just ask you on air because we have new listeners all the time on the radio. And, today is the Freedom Fiends have our 1 month chip in Status Anonymous. Today is 1 month that we've gone without bashing any other libertarians. So, yay.
Hey.
My name is Michael, yeah. And I'm a recovering statist. And not that it's statist to bash other libertarians, but Status Anonymous, this 12-step fellowship that Ben Stone and I created, and we've been doing, you know, a 36-part series on it on the radio, is on this show, is not just about dealing with addiction to the state. It's also about dealing with addiction to bad people and bad ideas. And we've discovered that pointing out the foibles of other people who are doing it wrong wasn't really accomplishing anything. And it was just taking up precious time that we could be doing other things. And it was really like driving the radio audience crazy because they were like, I don't know who these people are, man. You guys are, you know, it's kind of as if you had like a high school radio show from the audiovisual club of a high school talking about what Billy did to Sally in the gym and, you know, what John did to George in the lunchroom, and then you broadcast it nationwide. Like, people did not get it.
Or like if you tune into a soap opera for the first time, you know, you have no idea who everyone is or what the hell is going on.
And we were talking about one of our favorite soap operas, which is Peep Show, which is a British comedy that ran for many seasons, and it's excellent. And I suggest people go find it at any means necessary.
At once.
Yeah, watch it in one sitting, like just one, like 7 day sitting.
Me and Katie, actually, sometimes we go right back through it from the start.
I do that.
Right to end. It's brilliant. I mean, and it's one of those shows that has that repeat value.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 8 shows that I really like that I just go through in series. And by the time I get through the 8th one, you know, they're all like 5 to 15 seasons. So, you know, by the time I'm done with 8 of them and go back to the original one, it's been about 6 months and I don't remember. Or, you know, they're fresh again.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Peep Show, there's one, and this is going to sound like insider baseball if you don't know the show, but there's one where Mark and Jeremy go out to the country to Sophie's parents' house, and they go hunting, which is kind of a treat and a rarity in England. And they're out pheasant hunting because it's like really almost illegal to have guns, and pretty much only the upper class can have guns and go shoot them on their property. Yeah. And they can only have like break action double barrel shotguns, and they have to have them heavily registered and have background checks and everything. So they're out pheasant hunting, and Mark's inner dialogue, there's a lot of inner dialogue spoken as voiceover in this show. And Mark is saying, yes, this is what the rural people do. They go out and they shoot ducks, and then they shoot trespassers, and then themselves because of the EU and the VAT tax. So explain what we were talking about of the insider baseball of European politics. Now, if you're an American, which you probably are if you're listening to this live on the radio, if you're in America, at least I should say, and you're listening to this and you're like, why should I care about the VAT tax in Scotland? Here's why. Because you know all those theories about there's a one world government coming and I have the documents and they're going to take your rights away. Well, there is and there are and they're going to. And a lot of it has to do with the European Union. So I'm going to lay back and go, wow. While Dr. Dan Green, postal doctor, explains all of this to us. Go ahead, sir. And don't forget about UKIP.
UKIP are very important. Well, because actually that's part of the joke that you just mentioned in Peep Show, because they're kind of the sort of upper class sort of people, sort of upper middle class, rurally sort of people. And this part of UKIP, that are the UK, the United Kingdom Independence Party, the full name, they started out as that kind of those kind of people as an anti-EU sort of single issue party. But now they've grown and grown, and they've even got two members of parliament now. So it's a kind of jibe at those kind of people. But
aren't there people who are wrongly basically think they're the equivalent of the Libertarian Party in America?
Some people do think that, yeah.
There's nothing libertarian about them at all. They're very statist and very nationalist, right?
Well, there was a time when they were kind of libertarian, but the problem is they were trying to appeal to a certain demographic, but now they've started to try and appeal to kind of disenfranchised Labour voters. So they've started to embrace things like promoting the National Health Service and things like that. And on their manifesto, they actually say, if you serve 12 years in the armed forces, then we will give you a job for life in the police or the prison service or the border agency. Yeah. So, I mean, that's scary, man. I don't like that at all. You know, but they are important. And basically, two Tory MPs defected to their party, re-ran elections, and won. So now they're, you know, they might just be protest sort of votes because they're isolated elections. You know, that's not a mass election, but they're definitely a force in the background, man. But they've gotten to. They've mixed with too many of these old Labour types, these old socialisty types. So they'll probably end up having to either split into a libertarian and socialist faction, or they'll just be a mess of both and go nowhere.
Yeah, and England or the United Kingdom does not have the winner-take-all representation in your parliament the way we do in Congress. I mean, we have two parties here. I have nothing to do with it. It's outside of my control. And I don't vote because if voting changed anything, it would be illegal. I remember seeing that in like the 80s on a leather jacket.
Emma Goldman.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that on a leather jacket on a punk rocker in the 80s. And I was like, that makes sense. And then I kept voting for, you know, 10 or 15, 20 more years. 15 more years. Yeah. So explain how it works differently there with representation and how many parties there are and how they actually get a seat at the table.
Well, there's actually a whole lot of parties. Just now, there's a coalition government because basically you need to get a majority of the seats in the House to control what happens in the House of Commons. The Conservative Party failed to do that, but they did get more seats than Labour. So what they did was they had to form a coalition with another party, the Liberal Democrats. So that's basically two parties ruling in this kind of weird coalition that's not been working, obviously. But there's actually loads of parties in there. I mean, you have all these regional parties in Northern Ireland. You have like Scottish parties like the SNP. You've got Welsh parties, Plaid Cymru or the Welsh National Party. So there's quite a lot of different parties on the opposition benches. That's why the benches face each other. The government sit on one side and the opposition sit on the other side. That's the only kind of cool thing about that parliament is the fact that they look at each other. And it's almost like if it was more kind of based in Southern Europe, they'd probably jump over the table and start punching each other, you know.
Southern Europe being what countries?
I think it's happened in Italy before. I know it's happened in places like Turkey and things like that. The people have had punch-ups.
Is Turkey part of the EU?
It's not just now. I think there's a big debate going on about that, actually. There had been for a while. But as far as I know, it isn't at the moment. The EU is a great, great example of how government just grows inherently and why small government can't work. Because it started out as a tiny trading bloc between a few countries, and now it keeps adding states and adding states, and it keeps getting more controls over more laws of more countries. So it's another example of how you can't have a small government, you can't be a minarchist, because like all governments do, it will just grow and it will get out of control.
Now, the laws, the EU, do they actually pass laws, or is it things that are called policy, or is it actually laws?
No, there's laws, yeah. Like, we can't, certain things, like, will contradict European law, and it can affect all sorts of things. There's common agricultural policies, fishery policies, even stuff like to do with like health and safety in workplaces. You know, there's EU laws on things like that.
And they contradict the laws of some of the countries?
Yeah, they overrule the laws of the parliaments. Yeah, that's how it works. So basically, actually, I've looked this up so many times in so many different sources, and the best estimates I can get of how many of our laws they make are between 5 and 50%, because everyone defines law differently, funnily enough.
Wow. And then are there all sorts of bodies devoted, created to interpreting the cross pollination of the laws in the different countries?
there's a lot of mad bureaucracy within the EU. It's basically a gravy train, you know. That's all it is. Some people have theorized that it runs a bit like the Soviet Union, because they have a president, but he's not elected by the people of Europe. You know, he's appointed, you know, so there's scary stuff like that. Some people were actually at one point saying it could be Tony Blair. And God damn it, can you imagine, man, if that happened? It's not what we want at all.
What's the connection? What is the connection between the EU, the UN, and NATO?
I'm not sure if, well, I don't know how they connect, actually, you know, because, they're all bodies that encompass a large part of the world and control things, but I don't know how they actually interface with each other.
Where is the head of the EU? Is it in Belgium? Like the,
It is, yeah. It's in Brussels. Yeah. And I think that's NATO as well.
Yeah.
I think that's where they're based too.
So how much daily, knowledge or interaction does the average Scottish person have with the fact that the EU exists? How much constant reminder is there of it?
It seems to go through cycles in the news, you know, like sometimes we have like, the debate will come up, you know, people will start, some prominent person will start calling, well, what they call a prominent person will start calling for a referendum in or out of the EU, and then there'll be big debates about it, and then parties will start, well, there's an election coming up, and I bet that at least one party will promise an out referendum in the EU, because lots of polls have shown that people want a thing, that people want to choose whether they're going to be in or out, because the last time it was voted on was in the 70s, and that was for something very different. That was for like a sort of trading area, but it wasn't for this massive, you know, government that it's become now.
Excellent information. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Dan Green, talking about the creeping one world government that's a spider in Europe seeping out into the rest of the world.
Worms.
Like well worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah. So I'm hanging out with Dan Green. Dan Green from the Greening Out Podcast. What's the URL of the Greening Out Podcast, Dan Green?
It's just greeningoutpodcast.co.uk or .com. Take you to the same place.
Greeningoutpodcast.com. Yeah. Americans don't know what the .co.uk is. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's why.
I think it should just be .uk. I don't know why they do that.
That's come out now. It's a domain name. You can now get a .uk. But I've already kind of cemented mine. I might buy one. Gee, I don't know.
Welcome to the mid-90s, England.
Do you know what you can buy now as well? You can buy Dot London, and they're so expensive, man. They cost a fortune.
Yeah, they came out with like 1,000 new top-level domains a while back, and I was just like, this is just a scam because they know every corporation is going to have to buy Pepsi in everything, you know, IBM in everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So,
clever business move.
A lot of Americans have a very cartoonish view of anything outside of America. And a lot of Americans believe we're number one. We're number one. Generally, people who believe that their country is number one have not traveled much. And I'm not saying, what's the thing that conservative talk show hosts accuse people of when they talk like this? Of, apologizing
for xenophobia.
Yeah, no, they're xenophobic. They accuse American xenophobes accuse people of apologizing for America. I'm not apologizing for America because I didn't do it. Whatever it did, I didn't do it, and I couldn't prevent it if I wanted to. So I'm not going to apologize for anything. And there are amazing things and amazing people from all nations of the world. And, you know, even countries that like Americans hate, like, oh, those dirty Arabs, those Arabs, like the Arabs invented mathematics, you know, and the Greeks invented democracy. And,
the Muslims actually protected the works of Plato and Aristotle. And if it wasn't for Muslim scholars actually preserving those works, we wouldn't have them today. They would have been destroyed, probably lost.
Yeah. So talk about, how Muslims are perceived in Europe. Because the thing is, like, Americans don't realize also is that Europe is a lot closer to the Middle East than America is. You know, it's like, I mean, how far are you from Afghanistan? Probably as far as like Los Angeles to New York City or less, aren't you?
I think maybe more. I'm not entirely sure.
But not that far. It's not all the way around the world.
Not that far. It's just, it's just beyond Europe, you know.
I mean, people in England often go on holiday to Greece, right?
Popular. I've been told the kind of Greek islands.
Yeah, and Greece is like, you know, you can hit Syria with a stone from Greece.
I can't remember which one
and
it is.
Syria is kind of the start of the Middle East, you know. So how far is Turkey from London, you know?
I don't know how far it is. I know it's quite popular as a holiday destination. A lot of people go to resorts in Turkey from the UK. I'm not sure how far. I think it's only like a 5-hour flight or something.
It's a 3-hour, 50-minute flight from London to Istanbul. It's not that far. It's 1,900 miles. So from London to Istanbul, Turkey is about the distance of probably like Salt Lake City to New York. Actually, no, probably more like Kansas City to New York, I think. So yeah, man, everything's a lot closer over there. So in Europe, one thing I noticed traveling Europe is like, you know, you travel like 3 hours and people are speaking a different language and there's a different culture.
Yeah.
Americans don't understand that. You know, they're like, America's huge and it's kind of homogenous and most people speak English. And most people in Europe have been to other countries. Most people in America have only been to like Canada, which is basically like you can't even tell you're outside of America. You know, Tijuana, which is a lot like Los Angeles. So yeah. it's a different thing. Like you probably grew up having a passport. Most people here don't.
Oh yeah. Since I was a child, yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about more maybe about the creeping one world government, or maybe about some movies we like when we get back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends with Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast. Give me a worms.
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 In this country, and most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite, LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows any reuse, with credit, by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So I'm Michael Dean. I'm the main cheese here at Freedom Fiends, unincorporated. And I'm talking to one of our newest hosts, Dan Green.
From the little cheese.
One of the little cheeses, the side cheese. We have some cheese on the side here, and it's Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast in Scotland. And his wife, Katie Green, is also a new host, and she's going to be on with Dan tomorrow night. So, Dan, We're talking about the European Union. We didn't even say what we're talking about the EU, and we didn't say what the EU was. It's the European Union, which is the one world globalist blob that encompasses all of most of the European countries now and adds another layer of laws on top of federal, state, local equivalents over there. So how do you feel about these new laws and your new one world overlord masters there?
Well, it's funny because at the country level, a lot of the countries can't seem to get along. We were talking about Saturday Night Live, and there was a sketch before when, you know, there was a thing with Greece and the Eurozone the first time. And, like, you know, he was saying, you haven't reached an agreement yet. It's not like you all speak different languages and your grandparents all killed each other in World War II. You know, but it's true. But, like, the EU is, there's actually been people who I've actually wanted to call for like a European army, literally.
NATO is already with other kind countries America?
It pretty much is, you know, but they'll call that an alliance. But, you know, that was set up against an attack from the Soviet Union, you know, which doesn't even exist anymore. So,
yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with governments. Like, whenever they create, there's always mission creep. Like when they create something that's supposed to be ad hoc to deal with some problem, as soon as the problem no longer exists, they don't say, okay, we'll pack it up and go home, because everyone has jobs and everyone has money and everyone has vested interests and they're all getting fat off of people who actually do honest labor for a living. So do you think that the EU was started by people who genuinely believed that there was a need for it, or do you think it was started by people who just secretly were like, let's create something else to tap everything and take everyone's money and tyrannize them?
See, that's the interesting question, because that's what the split is. There's a lot of conspiracy sort of theories about motives behind why the EU were started. It seems convenient, you know. You could say, look, we've had these wars, you know, we need to do something about it, so let's, you know, have a closer integration. I mean, that kind of makes sense. But then what you have is you start getting, you know, the economic version of World War II, because that's basically what we were having in, like, you know, when Germany were imposing austerity on Greece, and then in Greece they were painting pictures of Angela Merkel, who's sort of the German chancellor. They were pictures of her as a Nazi and things like that in Greece, you know, and all this stuff just came right back up. So you find all that, and It does sound, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence about this because I have heard all these different kind of theories. I don't know if, even if it was started for good intentions, put it this way, if it was started for good intentions to keep Europe together, to keep peace in Europe, it's not done that really because it's starting to ignite again and it's gone way, way out of control. You know, it's gotten way too big. You know, it's becoming the new Soviet Union.
There's a common saying that libertarians have of that when people ask for more laws, they don't see the gun in the room. And what we mean by that is, you know, under every law, under every piece of paper that is a law, there is the threat of a gun and the threat of a cage. Because without that, a law is just a suggestion. I've kind of extrapolated that into what I think is going to be the title of this episode. Instead of the gun in the room, I'm going to call this the goon in the room. Because I don't think people see when they say, think of the children and we need to add more laws and we need to have more bureaucracy or whatever people say. People don't say they want more bureaucracy. They say they want more order and they want more, I don't know, what do people say? But what they're really saying is we want more goons. We want more people with guns. We want more enforcers. So people don't see the goon in the room. And actually, some of them do. Some really nanny people, you know, they want a cop on every corner and they want their neighbors to be arrested for violating things that have no victim. Do you see that a lot there? Do you see people who just really get a kick out of like when somebody gets arrested for something that has no victim?
Yeah, absolutely. I see all the time. It's just the usual, you know, there's people that, for example, there's a lot of sort of anti-marijuana things going on here. You know, there was this study that was all plastered all over a lot of the sort of anti-marijuana, more conservative papers. And it was plastered all over it. That, oh, this will make you go insane and all this stuff. And now one of the TV channels, Channel 4, has they've put out a thing. It's like this old newsreader basically smokes some weed live on air. And apparently there's already been a letter written by a group called Clear who are advocating for, like, you know, legal cannabis. They've already written a letter saying it's unethical, it's biased because of, you know, how they're doing it. So, like, there's actually a kind of things like that. There's like a big push against against that for some reason here. I don't know why that is. I think it's a reaction to the, you know, more sort of liberal attitude to it in the US.
If people don't know, you used a phrase in there, newsreader. That's the European or the United Kingdom equivalent of, you know, a talking head on TV. Or a newsreader.
Like an anchorman.
Yeah, an anchorman. It's actually a really accurate term because, you know, a lot of anchormen aren't actually reporters. They don't go out and find the news. They just read it. And they're newsreaders. Yeah.
Yeah. Or repeaters.
Is that, they call them that?
Well, that's, I guess, a David Icke term, actually, because basically they repeat the government line all the time. So some people say they're repeaters, not readers.
It's a David Icke term?
I think it's a David Icke term.
He's kind of loony.
Not that I'm a fan of his.
He's loony, man. Is he English? Where's he from? Is he Irish?
Oh, yeah, he's English. He was actually, maybe some people don't know this in the US, but he was actually a football player, for a professional football player, and then he was on TV here. He was like a sort of sports reporter, and he was well known. And then he went on this popular talk show in the 90s and started spouting all this stuff about being the son of Godhead and stuff. And then that's what kind of kick-started all the rest of it. But yeah, he was actually on TV and stuff. He was well known in this country before all this sort of lizard stuff.
There's a bunch of people here like that too. Like Rush Limbaugh was actually, I think he was a disc jockey on a music station when he first started. And David Letterman was a weatherman. And Bill O'Reilly used to do Entertainment Tonight, which is like a gossip show about celebrities. There's actually a really funny clip if you ever watch it. I can't say it on air, but if you, do you know the clip I'm talking about? It's a young Bill O'Reilly when he's like probably 30.
Oh, and is it the famous one?
Yeah, it's the one he says, F it, we'll do it live. He's like screaming and swearing at his crew. Yeah.
Yeah, I've even seen a few parodies of it.
Yeah. And here we do it live here on the Freedom Fiends. So tell me more about the creeping Leviathan, the octopi that is the European Union that has its tentacles in even the pockets of Americans. And, you know, I mean, I really think there's a lot of politicians in America and kind of like non-politician policymakers and people like Bill Gates, who are kind of looking at the European Union as a grand experiment that they'd like to replicate here and everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard like the sort of theories of like a North American Union, and that's, you know, we're talking about one world government earlier. That's the kind of thing people would say, like you have a European Union, a North American Union, like an African Union, I think maybe an Asia Pacific sort of union. Merge
them
all,
and then they just press the
government.
And then, like, you know, Obama and Bill Gates stand next to each other and press a button on their chromed robot
and
turrets
hug,
and then just merge them. Yeah.
But do you know that Bill Gates apparently was involved in this seed bank thing? You know, there's this doomsday seed bank, and I think it's somewhere
Antarctica.
Like in Norway. Oh, it's like somewhere at some island or something off the coast of Scandinavia, and he's involved in that, which is also a tad creepy.
Well, you know,
it kind of scares me.
I don't know. It's, you know, the elites want to have fresh vegetables after they exterminate 90% of the world's population.
It's just like he's got, it's like a villain or something. It's like he's got this ice fortress where he keeps his seeds where he will replant the world once he has destroyed all the unworthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
David Icke was right. I'm starting to get scared now.
And it's the kind of funny thing, too, is that, like, you know, basically they're talking about like heirloom seeds, you know, seeds that aren't modified and are, you know, perfect examples of each species, kind of like a Noah's Ark of seeds of, you know, common foodstuff seeds. And, you know, it is something that like governments and billionaires are involved in maintaining. But, you know, a lot of the ads on talk radio are for heirloom seeds, too. And like when you know, commoners like us buy them and talk to their neighbors like, oh, I'm buying heirloom seeds. Like a lot of times the neighbors think you're a crazy conspiracy theorist, but you're just doing your version of what the billionaires are doing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Man. Totally. Oh, scary.
So we want to talk about a movie called Frank. Talk about Frank. I watched Frank and really liked it.
Oh, I love Frank. So basically it's kind of set in Britain at first. And yeah, I might spoil something by accident. So
we will say we don't really have spoiler alerts on this show, but our theory is if the media is over 6 hours old, you can spoil it.
Okay, fair play. I think
well
that's
over,
fair enough.
Well over 6 hours old.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Yeah, Frank was this movie. So it's about this guy who's trying to be a songwriter, but he's not very good. And he ends up falling in with this band who've got this really, really weird lead singer who always wears this massive head.
It's paper, like a mache head. Yeah, it looks like a cartoon, yeah. But he actually like sleeps in it and lives in it.
Yeah, and then I found out later that this was based on a guy called Chris Seavey, and he was a singer in a band called The Freshers, and this was like Frank, I think it was Frank Sidebottom, and it was his thing, it was his alter ego, and this guy was a sort of English comedian, and he was, like I said, a singer as well.
And
it was real, man.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Frank when we get back. You can watch Frank on Netflix. It's a really good movie. I really enjoyed it. The music's
unless
good.
Unless we spoil it for you.
Yeah, we'll spoil it for you. We'll try to spoil it for you.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Featuring a bunch of foreigners who are coming over here to take our radio jobs.
Damn foreigners.
That somehow plays on conservative radio. So, Dan Green, tell me more about the movie Frank and why you liked it.
Oh, Frank. So, yeah, like we said, so this guy who can't really, his name's John, and he's a kind of useless songwriter. But actually, let's talk about John for a second, because he was quite interesting, because he's trying to write songs, but he's really bad at it. So like, he's walking down the street and he passes by a woman, and he's in his head, you're hearing him, his thoughts all the time, and he's like going, woman in the red dress, you know, and all this kind of thing. And then he goes home and like, he tries to write a song, and he realizes he's actually playing, I think it's It Must Be Love by Madness. And then like, he kind of writes on his Twitter, like, his dinner's ready, and he sort of writes, been working on my music all day, tired, you know, this kind of thing. And
I did not catch that was an existing song. I know the band Madness, but I think I actually thought, wow, he just wrote a catchy song, but I probably was like, I've heard that somewhere in the distance, but didn't realize it. That's funny.
But and then the thing is, he's a terrible songwriter. But I remember I heard Willie Nelson before say that, you know, they asked him if, you know, whatever song was hard to write, and he said no, because the good ones are always the ones that come easy. Yeah. And I found that, so I think anyone that's written like a poem or a song or done a painting or anything like that, the really good ones are the ones you don't have to force, you know, you just let it go, and it's the easiest thing to do. But he's trying to force it, and that's why he's so bad. So I think that's like a really cool thing.
I would say, in my experience, that with any kind of creativity, the ones that you get a germ or a skeleton of it easy are the best ones, but they usually require a lot of work after that. I've never had a song like completely flow out of me in 2 hours or anything. It always takes kind of some days of sitting on simmer on the back burner of my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And the thing about this movie, I was surprised, and I was saying to you, was I was surprised that Maggie Gyllenhaal was in it. And then what surprised me more was all the music in Frank was played live by the band, which is pretty cool, which means she's pretty cool on the synthesizer.
She's kind of hot in a weird way in this movie.
Yeah.
She's the one that stabs him, though, right?
Yeah, she does. She's, yeah, she's spoiler.
She's crazy. Yeah, Davy Barker has a theory that that you can't really spoil a good story. The only stories that can be spoiled are like the ones where there's a twist at the end and the whole movie is based on this one twist at the end. And this is not that kind of movie. And I generally don't love movies like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I like, it's like, I could never enjoy Psycho or something, you know, or because I already know, you know, it's one of those things because it's so out there, it's been so long. But I know what you mean. I like this kind of film. I like the way this film kind of played out, because it was in like different sort of chapters, and then, you know, the way it ends is just, it's just almost, it's perfect, I would say. It just ends in the most perfect.
And I was, the music's great, and I was humming that song, I Love You, Wall, after the movie for hours and days after the movie was over. The music is kind of a cross between like The Doors and Pink Floyd, with kind of a modern feel to it, like an alt-rock feel to it. It's really special, fresh sounding music to me.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's the way Frank puts them through all these tests. Like, he won't let them play a song till it's completely done. So like, they'll play the slightest two notes and it's not perfect, and he's again, and it's all this stuff. Yeah. And then there's one bit when they're all playing and he's walking around and he's saying like, I'm in an aviary and all this kind of stuff, and he's like, you're laying an egg, lay me an egg, you know, and all this stuff when they're playing. It's crazy, but it's really bizarrely entertaining.
Yeah, and his kind of persona and perfectionism and insanity is also kind of based on Daniel Johnson and Captain Beefheart, who are two people that are widely considered to be geniuses that I don't really enjoy that much. And I think it's more the persona and story and legend around them that makes people like them. Kind of like Hitchcock, man. I've seen like 5 or 6 Hitchcock movies, and incredibly talented guy, and he broke a lot of boundaries, but I find his movies really kind of like ham-fisted, and you can just kind of feel like, it's really hard to lose yourself in them, because you can really feel the filmmaker's presence in them. I really feel like the best art kind of transcends the auteur, you know, it kind of, it doesn't leave the mark of, you know, it has the individuality of the filmmaker on it, but a Hitchcock film or a Captain Beefheart album or a Daniel Johnson song, they all kind of feel to me like the person is trying to put so much of their personality and their fingerprints all over it that it overshadows, you know, the song or the movie or the actors or the writing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the movie about Hitchcock that came out a little while ago more than I liked any Hitchcock movies. The one with Sir, who is it? The guy from that guy.
We'll get it. Get the research.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Talking with Dan Green about obscure artists, famous artists, and the artistic temperament, spirit, and creative process. So, Dan, lay another artist on me here. Turn me on to somebody.
All right, man. Stephen Jesse Bernstein. Stephen Jesse Bernstein, I found out about him by accident. It was like a free CD of all these sub-pop artists. And there was like obscure ones with some music magazine years ago. And it was a song from his album Prison. He was like, he was a performance artist and he was a poet, and he would, apparently his shows were really, really crazy. Like, he would read poems from a stage sometimes with a live rodent in his mouth, you know, with its tail twitching. Yeah. And like, he would throw things at hecklers. He would, like, beer bottles, apparently manuscripts, drumsticks, his own wallet. One time he threw a sandwich at a heckler. And if you look at the guy, he was so weird. He had all these kind of crazy home done tattoos all up his arms. Like those kind of old punk sort of really sort of scratched in tattoos.
Jailhouse, you know, tattoos. The old, yeah.
Totally, yeah. He was covered in them. But his music's amazing, you know. He made this album Prison and I just couldn't recommend it anymore. It's so cool. But he was so crazy.
He's dead. A lot of people are dead. Yeah. So did he die before he was on Sub Pop? He died in 91. I know Sub Pop was around then, but huh.
Yeah. I'm not actually sure. Yeah, he stabbed himself in the throat, which is... but like people like Kurt Cobain, Kurt Cobain was a massive fan of his, and so was Oliver Stone. And like he opened for Nirvana, he opened for like all those big bands at the time, like Big Black, you know, and Soundgarden, which shows that, you know, he was important at the time. He had a kind of bizarre celebrity.
I've never heard of him. I've heard of Daniel Johnson, but probably only because there was a movie made about it. No, I knew about him before that because I used to see Jello Biafra around San Francisco wearing a Daniel Johnson shirt. He was a big fan.
Yeah. Yeah. See, the Daniel Johnson thing, I don't know. I mean, I've heard a lot of his stuff, and some of it's really badly recorded, and I know that's supposed to be kind of the point, but I just don't enjoy it because it sounds like you've just put a wee... kind of dictaphone up to a guitar.
Yeah.
And I don't really get it.
There's no excuse for that too. Cause it's like, you know, I still say that a lot of what people like about some of these really fringe artists who, you know, were probably mentally ill and, you know, died young in bizarre ways. You know, the bipolar set, I guess I'd say the bipolar artists, you know, and a lot of them like the character Frank and the character he was named, based on, or the several people he's based on, and to an extent Kurt Cobain were like really against fame. Like they really were not ready for it. They really didn't like it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Kurt Cobain like had a lot of stomach problems, but also like independent of that would like throw up before performances, you know, like he was still nervous, mm-hmm. like playing before, you know, huge crowds when he was famous, and didn't like, you know, the feeling that he'd sold out. And, you know, some of these other people like never had a really chance to sell out. They were on tiny labels and died before they got any kind of big following, or, you know, in a lot of cases, like couldn't book a whole tour because they wouldn't show up, or they'd be in jail or in a mental hospital or in the hospital, you know, before the tour was finished. Gigi Allen comes to mind. And a lot of these people were kind of, some of these people were very confrontational with the audience, like Gigi Allen, and some of them were also like the opposite, like very kind of introspective and afraid of the audience, but that was part of their charm. A lot of times, I really think that a lot of the people's, and a lot of people love this kind of band. I mean, they're just like gaga about them. And a lot of times I find that it's kind of like the Emperor's New Clothes. Like, I kind of think that if these people didn't have these bizarre lives, and if the people who end up loving them just heard their music, they probably, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of the fans probably would be like, eh, whatever, you know? Whereas the one person that was really known for mental illness, that I really loved, and it was because of the music as much as the story behind him, was Syd Barrett, the co-founder of Pink Floyd. The first couple records with Pink Floyd were amazing. The two solo records he did were amazing and kind of fractured. I mean, they're a couple guys from Pink Floyd and a couple guys from, like, I think Soft Machine back him up on those two studio records, Madcap Laughs and Barrett. Mm-hmm. Have you heard those two records?
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't actually. I've got to be honest. No.
You should check them out. There's some really great songwriting on there, but you know, they leave in a lot of, like, mistakes and outtakes, and starts a song and then stops it and starts over. And at that point in his kind of degeneration from drugs and madness, after he'd been kicked out of Pink Floyd, he was really kind of unable to play with three other musicians in the same room at the same time. So all of the songs on there were recorded one of two ways. They were either he recorded solo guitar and vocal to tape, and then the band played to it, which is actually really hard to do. If you don't have the drums, it's hard. And you can kind of hear, like, where the band, and they're all great musicians, but you can hear where they kind of, like, vamp on one chord to kind of chat. Like, he'll do things that are really strange. Like, in a, you know, 4 or 5 chord kind of pop song, that's a A, B, A, B, C, A, B chord structure, or, you know, song structure. He'll do things that are wrong, but they're really cool. Like, you know, generally you'd play 8s and 12s and 4, you know, bars of each part, 4, 4, 8 or 12 or 24, you know, generally in pop music. But he'll play, like, you know, 13 measures or 14, you know, it's like, it goes like one or two rounds too long, and it's really strange. But I listened to those albums back to back when I was a kid, like, for years, to the point where I didn't listen to them for a long time. And recently I went, they're all on YouTube, you can listen to the whole album of either of them. And I listened to them, and I hadn't heard them in 31 or 32 years. And I, in my head and out loud, I sang every word, and, like, even knew, like, okay, this is the part where the chord goes one time too many, you know. but he was very, he was very known for having a very publicly reported mental breakdown and ending up in a mental institution. And, you know, the Pink Floyd have devoted whole albums to him. I mean, in songs, and, like, you know, Shine On You Crazy Diamond is about him, and several of the songs on Wish You Were Here are about him. And, you know, some of the stuff on Dark Side of the Moon about madness is about him, and the cackling voices in the background. And when I was a kid, I kind of wanted to be him when I grew up. Like, my goal when I was a kid was to, like, you know, create a great body of work and then go insane and then, you know, retire to grow vegetables and paint and be a recluse and be remembered for that great body of work. And, like, the thing was, though, like, I wasn't mentally ill, you know, so it was just kind of a fantasy. And I also, I fortunately, you know, I never really did, like, the one great album or the one great book that became the bestseller, and then I could retire, like Salinger or something, or Joy Division. You know, I've done like 12 albums with, you know, 4 different bands on 6 different labels, and, you know, none of them sold out the door. They all had cult followings, and there's still people who write me 20 years later and say, "Wow, I just found you online. I love this record, man. Where can I get it on vinyl?" And, you know, I've done records, I've sold $3 million worth of books, but, you know, most of them are nonfiction. My one novel only sold 1,000 copies. And, you know, basically I've kind of become the recluse who's, like, growing vegetables and painting. I don't grow vegetables or paint, but I've had the life that's out in the world, you know, traveling the world, you know, dating 6 or 7 women at once, and one of them always wants to kill you, and kind of survived to, like, basically be 50 years old and, you know, not famous and not rich, but not crazy and not addicted to drugs anymore. And I'm really kind of enjoying my semi-retirement. I like it.
Yeah, this is pretty cool, man. I know what you mean. Like, it's about, like, sometimes that one thing. And reclusive artists for me are the most kind of interesting ones. You know, I think I'd probably be reclusive if I didn't have to, you know, go to work every day. I'd end up, you know, turning into a recluse. But, like, Katie and I, we make music together. We recently started making music together only like the last few months. And it's interesting how we've got kind of similar influences, but then completely dissimilar influences. And we're kind of trying to mash them all into one coherent noise jumble.
I look forward to hearing some of it. Have you released any of it?
One song's online. There's a song called Where You Left, and that's actually online just now. It's a sort of rough sort of version, but like it gives you a kind of an idea. Actually, Jim Jesus described it as the Residents collaborating with Alanis Morissette, and he said he dug it.
Cool. Yeah, Jim Jesus is a good friend of mine. I have not met, but we talk a lot, and he actually sent me some Cards Against Humanity today cards. Libertarians Against Humanity cards. He made some custom ones that say, "The people demand that Fiend Phone should also be available for." That's pretty cool. I don't know if it's just a custom one for me or if it's actually going to be in a deck, but I dig it. Yeah, he also sent me something really strange. He sent me a book, a Scientology book, like a pamphlet, like a thick pamphlet, like 20 or 30 pages. And he wrote in it, "Can you make Fiend Phone for this cult?" And I threw it away. I had no interest in having it in my house. And
their headquarters looks like the lair of an evil genius. It looks cartoonish.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? You
know, have I seen it? I'm from Los Angeles, man. I saw it in person every day. Yeah.
Okay, stupid question.
Yeah, have I seen it? I drove by it every day for 10 years. Yeah.
It looks crazy. It looks like the lair of a supervillain in like some kind of movie.
Yeah, I actually,
not just me.
I actually, when I was in LA at one point, I was between homes. You know, I wasn't homeless. I had money, but I was like, you know, my lease subletted ended somewhere and I needed another place quick. And I found this bulletin board that had a room for rent at a reasonable price in a neighborhood I was willing to live in. And I went over to do it and like, you know, gave the guy $100 security deposit or something. And he gave me the key. And, Then I found out that like it was a room in a Scientology center, like some kind of front group. You know, they have a lot of like businesses that are not called Scientology. And and I basically had like threatened to sue them to get my $100 back. I was like, I'm not moving into this dormitory of Scientologists. I have no interest in that. And it was also like, you know, it had a bunch of rules and, you know, you couldn't like bring girls over. And it was weird. It was like the army or something, but different.
Yeah, do they not have like a navy? They've got like a navy or something like that.
Called the Sea Org or something. Yeah. Gotta be careful what you say about them. They're very litigious.
Yes.
We're just observing. We're just observing that. Yes,
just observe. No judgment here.
No judgment here. We'll leave that up to Jim Jesus. He's had death threats for talking about them. He's braver than I am. All right, worms. Yeah,
me too. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
For some reason, when you said me too, you mean he's braver than you, or you two have had death threats for going after Scientology?
No, he's braver than me. Yeah. No, I've not had any death threats. That would be more interesting.
Yep. I'm still taping. Let me shut this off here. This is Michael Dean talking to Dan Green with the redemption in the third act on the Freedom Fiends. And come around tomorrow night. It's going to be Dan Green and myself and Dan's wife, Katie Green. It's going to be a party. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. Yeah.
Yep. So let's see. Two things really quick about artists. I was never really like confrontational with the audience. I was more confrontational with my band. Like, you know, one time I took my bass and like cleared the drum kit out from under the drummer while he was playing. Cause I was angry at him. It wasn't really a stunt. Another time we were opening up for Pavement in Boston at a club called Middle East. And, the drummer from Pavement, who was one of those mentally ill, or known for being mentally ill or bipolar kind of guys, was trying to play my drummer's drums while my drummer was playing them during our set. And I was really drunk and I tried to hit him in the head with the bass and like knock him out. And my sister was there and she was horrified by it. And he ducked, but I would never do that now. I would never try to harm somebody like that. But let's see, what else did I do? One of the funny things I did, as far as like, I never, you know, I was reading about people like throwing gross things on the audience. I never threw gross things on the audience, but one time we were opening up for the Flaming Lips when we were opening for them on tour, and we were playing our hometown show in San Francisco, and it was at the Kennel Club, which holds about 500 people, but there were about 800 people there. And I lived across the street from the club, and we were in the middle of a tour, and I was actually I found out I was going to lose my apartment by the end of the tour. So you know, I did that a lot, like went on tour and lost my apartment. So I went over to my apartment after soundcheck and like got everything in my apartment pretty much and brought it over in like four or five garbage bags. I had people help me and I just threw it out from the stage and everyone passed it around. And it was basically clothes and books and notes and love letters from girls who were at the show. And I remember this one girl said, like, she looked down on the floor and there was a puddle of beer and there was a letter she'd written me, a love letter, like on her, under her foot. And so I guess that was poetic justice. But we commingled that night anyway. So Syd Barrett was a big influence on me, especially not just the insanity, but like there's this album cover of him where he looks really freaky and cool and weird and his hair is all messy and he's kind of crouching in this really kind of beautiful old room with like two different color board floors and then varnished. And the only thing in the room is like a guitar and a naked woman kind of doing yoga in the background. And I was like, that's going to be me when I grow up. Like when I was 15 and I saw this record, I was like, that's going to be me when I grow up. But you know, the thing is like, the naked woman's cool and the guitar's cool, but that room would have horrible acoustics. And now that I've grown up and grown to appreciate good acoustics and I sound condition rooms that I live in, I couldn't live in a room that was bare walls and bare floors. So, yeah. So who influenced you at a young age that you still think about?
Do you know Nick Drake, the English folk singer?
I know who he is, and I know a lot of people I respect, like Leonard Cohen, really dig him, and a lot of songwriters I like, but I heard a little bit of him, and he didn't blow me away, but tell me about him.
No? Oh, man, I love Nick Drake. Well, he died young at 26. He died of it was supposedly like an accidental overdose, but some people have said that it was suicide.
And, oh, suicide.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah, there's two theories, you know, but nobody really knows. It's never been resolved if it was suicide or not, basically. But he was a folk singer, man, and a lot of his songs, that's how I see, like, it's so kind of, because he's English, you know, and the UK is a small place, man. It's smaller than some of your states. And the way he plays is like, see, when I go out, if I go out to the park with my dog and I've got my headphones in, man, and see if I put on some Nick Drake, that's how everything looks to me. It's like the music is so, it just describes it. It feels like the place I'm in, if you know what I mean. And I've always kind of really got it. And he always said this stuff of like, he always had this conflict of, should I do something else? You know, should I, because no, you're not, maybe not a lot of commercial success kind of came his way. And even in a song, you know, it's called One of These Things First, and it's like, I could have been a sailor, could have been a cook, I could have been a book and all this kind of thing. And he had all these inner conflicts. He even thought about joining the army, and at one point when I was younger, that's what I thought about doing, you know. So it really resonated with me in those two levels.
I'm glad you did not join the army.
Yeah, me too, man, me too, thank you.
Oh, it's been a really good show, Dan.
It has. I've enjoyed myself.
Yep. And people should come back in 22 hours to hear Dan again with his lovely,
lovely
and talented wife, Katie. It'll be a good show. It'll be a party.
Yeah.
I'll try to get I'll try to get some sleep between now and then, too.
Katie's over there.
I see her. No, I don't.
That would be weird.
Well, you're describing her like Nick Drake would, so I see her.
Good point.
Give me a worms, man.
Worms.